A very good morning. On behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to Tech 10 for Talmud. Chulin Kuf Chaf Beis, Chulin 122a, pagination is 243. We'll start at the Mishnah, which is about midway on the page, and we'll do an excerpt of it. The Mishnah starts, Elu she'oroseyan kivisaron. These are things that their skin is like their flesh. Oroseya normally is the word hide, but hide would be the word that we use if it was thick and tough and you could make parchment out of it. Oroseya in this case is that it's a much softer material and it's considered kibisaron, it's considered like flesh. And the first one that's listed is or ha'adam, the skin of a person. Now, if we drop down further into the Mishnah, at the beginning of a line, v'kulan she'ivdan, all things on this list, if they were worked the way leather is worked, stepped on, processed, etc., tahorin, they will become tahar, chutz me'or ha'adam, except for the hide, the skin of a person, that retains its prohibition, its status. If we jump into the Gemara, Amar Ula, there's a first approach which relates to the first part of the Mishnah, which said that the skin of a person is like his flesh, same halacha. Amar Ula, Dvar Torah or Adam Tahar. Really, the skin of a person, according to this first approach, is tahar, doesn't convey tumah, even though it's from a corpse. Umatam amru tame, it's a legislation of rabbinic origin. And what is the reason for that? Gezera shemayasa adam oros aviv v'imo shtichin. There was a fear that a person would go ahead and make the hide of his father and mother into throw pillows, into some sort of cushion. And therefore they made a legislation that the skin should be metame, should be conveying tuma. Now there's a lot going on over here. Firstly, to come in like from the back door and not deal with the big looming elephants in the discussion, just what does Tumah accomplish in terms of this rabbinic legislation? And this will carry us into the second approach as well. So the commentaries explain that even though anything coming from the human body is forbidden in benefit, if it's coming from the corpse, it's forbidden in benefit. Nevertheless, there were people who were lax in such an observance. And although it's quite extreme, but it apparently was a concern that they would not observe the prohibition of benefit. But if you imposed a prohibition of tuma, of ritual impurity, then they would observe it. Why so? So the commentaries explain that a person might be non-observant in many ways, but if he didn't observe the laws of ritual impurity, people would distance themselves from him. If he were to do something on his couch that's not widely accepted, then people are going to distance themselves and they won't visit him. And that's something that even the non-observant person couldn't handle. And therefore, when it came to ritual impurity, which impacted other people and therefore reflectively impacted them in a big way, so they would observe that because they had to be on par with what was normative observance. And therefore, when you imposed it as a ritual impurity, it would get observed, even though really it was supposed to be observed immediately, simply because you're not allowed to benefit from the human body. Now, moving on to the elephant in the room, he's going to use the skin of his father and mother and make it into some sort of cushion? So fine, it's not likely, let's say, but still, what's going on over here? So one approach is that they purposely did this thing thinking that they were honoring the father and mother and they were creating a bust or something like that, and they would eulogize them for longer, and it was some sort of foreign custom which the rabbis did not want to allow to become anything part of Jewish ritual, and therefore they distanced themselves from it. But this was not a person thinking he was disrespectful to his father and mother. This was a person who was thinking that he was being respectful in some way, and we had to distance this behavior. And that's where this is coming from. I'm reminded of somebody who wrote in to a great publication that they have a new way to celebrate on Simchas Torah. They unroll the Sefer Torah and they have all the children gather around their synagogue and they hold this open, unrolled Sefer Torah and it spans one end of the room to the other, and all the children hold it, and it's so invigorating, I guess. And the person who received the letter wrote back, this is who I spoke to, he told me, he responded that this is not a Jewish custom, this is actually something that the Nazis did when they wanted to disgrace a Sefer Torah. They unrolled it and spread it throughout the room, and he strongly encourage them to discontinue this custom. And that's at least one approach over here. Another approach might be regarding this father-mother into cushions, the skin. It's just so foreign that apparently there was such a custom, and the rabbis wanted to show how extreme this could be if it's allowed to go on. A person might end up doing this even to his father and mother. And therefore, it should be stopped. Continuing in the Gemara in the second approach does not attribute this statement of Ula to the first part of the Mishnah, but rather to the second part of the Mishnah. In other words, the original Mishnah's statement that Oroseyam Kivsaron, that skin is like the flesh, and is included in its halachas in terms of conveying Tumah. Now, the second part of the Mishnah, if we assume Ula was not referring to the first part, then that stands even on a biblical level. The second part of the Mishnah was where the hide was worked, the skin was worked, and now it's more like hide than a part of the person or the animal in tanning. So the second approach says that that's where this statement of Ula was said, and it was meant that biblically, once something is tanned, it's no longer conveying Tumah, it's so dried out and processed, but rabbinically, it conveyed Tumah because of these behaviors that they wanted to put an end to. V'ika demasni lo aseifa, it's referring to the second part, v'kulan she'ibdon, if it was worked, or shehilach ben kedei avoda, or walked on, tahorim, they become tahar, chutz me'ar adam, except for the hide of a person, the skin of a person, that is not going to change. Omar Ula, Ula said, dvar Torah, or adam shibda Torah, really it did change, biblically. Umatam amru, tame, why is it listed as Tame, conveying Tuma, Gezeira, it's a rabbinic legislation, Shema Yasadam Orasava V'imoshtichin, lest a person make these skins of a person into cushions. Mandamasni Aseifa, if you're referring to it regarding the second part of the Mishnah, after it's been worked, Avala Reisha, but when it came to the first part of the Mishnah, where it was not worked, Tuma Da'oraisa, it's straightforward Tuma, nothing to discuss, and that's how the Rambam paskins in Tumas Meis, Gimel, Yud Aleph, the Kesef Mishnah points out, like the second approach of Ula. Now, there's a comment in Taisvis that I just want to briefly make note of, based on the Gemara in Nida Nunhei, which is related to this Gemara. A distinction is drawn between bones and flesh, as opposed to skin. And the expression is gizo machlif. It regenerates, is usually the way that's translated. And that skin, in some respect, regenerates in a way that bone or flesh does not. Now, there's a basic concept of regenerating, which is discussed, just commonplace discussion, the awareness that skin rejuvenates itself every 2 to 4 weeks, and that if you wanted to be facetious about it, you're not you anymore because you've regenerated. Obviously, that's not true. The question is, what holds the person together fundamentally? Now, bones are also understood to regenerate in scientific literature, but over 10 years. So perhaps the fact that skin doesn't last 30 days typically is causing it to be viewed differently. It regenerates so frequently. Perhaps the concept is, as others phrase it, that if you'd remove it, would it regenerate? A bone, you pull it out, there's nothing there. Skin will cover over the area if there's a wound. It does open up the whole other discussion of contemporary science and halacha. If a person would have a brain transplant, are they still them? Or because they have memories of somebody else, have they changed? Is it dependent on the heart? Then what about a heart transplant, etc.? Identifying what is it really that is the person. If a womb is transplanted, does that mean that the person is a child of a different mother? In general, once something is grafted, we assume it's part of the whole, part of what it's been grafted into. We have this in trees, where something that's more than 3 years old and does not have the laws of Orla is grafted with something that's less than 3 years old and does have the laws of Orla. What is it considered once they're grafted together? I'm just mentioning it as an awareness that gizo machlif, regenerating on some level, is a factor in this discussion. Yashikoach, thank you for joining.